Welcome to Clarity Call to Cash podcast, where we discuss the latest trends and best practices with leading industry experts. I am Sergey Ermakov, your host for this episode today. And we have a bit new format for this podcast. We have two guests, which means quite an exciting conversation ahead of us. And I think that we will get twice more insights from you guys. So I'm thrilled to have today Stefan Weisenberger, the global VP and head of industry business unit Process Industries and Natural Resources, and Chelsea Ramage, solution manager for Mill Product and Mining. So Chelsea, Stefan, I'm giving you the chance to introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thank you a lot, Sergey, for having us. We enjoy that. So I'm Stefan. I'm heading the industry business unit, as you said. So I'm responsible for the vertical part of our strategy for a number of the heavy manufacturing industries, including metals, paper, building materials, also chemicals and mining. So all of them quite heavy. All of them a big environmental impact. All of them complex manufacturing with rules and all kinds of things. So interesting.
Thank you. Chelsea?
Yeah, sorry. My name is Chelsea Ramage. I am based out of North America in the Philadelphia area and actually working under Stefan within his team as a solution manager. My focus is primarily within public cloud and our ERP solution and working with mid-sized companies. So it's really great to be here. Thank you.
Perfect. So we'll get all different angles. Okay, perfect. So before we start, so I think that, I mean, we are diving into the industry, right? But let's try to keep the call to cash format. And I think that we can start with the topic that I think is on top of all our podcasts recently that we did. And I think that it's on top of agendas of all the business leaders. And this topic is AI. And I think that it's extremely interesting to have the industry look at AI and also your opinion. And I think that we could discuss a couple specific use cases that would be related to quote to cash. But before we do this, what is your view on AI in the industry? How do you see AI helps businesses to solve their challenges they never knew existed? How do you think that AI is supporting companies in achieving the the new level of productivity that they're getting with that? You would be first, right?
I would like to go first. I mean, I'm just coming from a advisory council for one of our industries in Newtown Square. We had a one-day deep dive workshop on that, talking with customers on exactly the topic, trying to understand, AI is a big topic, a big buzzword. It's in everyone's mouth, but there are many different versions of that. There is old RPA. There is classical machine learning, what creates a tremendous amount of value in our companies nowadays. And then there's a new hype that basically came up with generative AI. We had the same discussion when we were in Sydney, just for the Mining Council, and having interesting, similar questions. Okay, so what can it realistically do? How can we make this safe? How can we make this responsible? How can we trust the results? So I would say it's a big opportunity, obviously, in our industries like in everyone else. It's about creating efficiency. It's creating basically automating things, all sorts of things. This is where a lot of the classical RPA and machine learning comes into place. Basically, in some areas, cutting out 90% of manual tasks, be it in the sales area, be it also in manufacturing. I know you want to have this in the quote to cash, but our industry, it starts in creating a quote or a sales order, but immediately you run into, can I manufacture that? How can I manufacture that? So there's always a connection into the entire make-to-order process. And to make this work, automation can help. Machine learning can help. So what did we discuss? For me, what stood out were two things. One was a common agreement. There is a hell lot of value in classical machine learning. So all companies are using that in one way or the other. And there are, I think it was a chemical company that actually mentioned, okay, so it's, how much do you think that you can actually increase in upsell by product recommendations? A simple thing, a machine learning thing. And it is just a lot. And basically for one company it was 30%. They can say basically they sell more simply by advising smarter about what kind of product to choose. And of course, it depends on the industry, but this is an interesting topic. One thing I found surprising for me was the way that it's not just complex use cases. It's a lot really, talking to a system. It's like, I don't want to know how and figure out how to solve things. So it's points like, can I ask my analytical system? Can I even have my customers give them responses? One customer was asking, do we need a customer portal anymore? Or can we basically say we do that entirely language-based? And this is, I would say we're not there yet in our industry. It's a discussion a lot of people are having. We see that one of the discussions yesterday was to say, okay, can I cut out a lot of my customer service tickets that I get questions? And a lot of that can be basically where the system can be asked and then you come back with a response and basically say, okay, where's my order? Typical question. In a complex global supply chain, is it still in manufacturing? You can put that on a page or you can actually ask that in a chat.
Which is exactly what we did before starting this podcast or getting Stefan this morning was asking himself, check the many questions to the chat and seeing what we could come up with for a script even with a minimum, very basic question.
Yeah. So asking ChatGPT, okay, is it smarter? And it comes up with a nice set of use cases that we're asking it, but it doesn't have the customer insights. That's something probably we can add better.
Yeah, sure. You know, we did the study recently on the application of AI in different industries. And one of the questions was, would you be willing to use chatbot? Everybody said no. And the question whether you would be willing to use like the language model, ChatGPT, like everybody said yes. So I think that there are pieces of technology that gain trust really quickly. And there are the old ones that's still not there, right? So because the chatbots are usually completely useless in most cases.
Yeah, and they've been around for how long? 20 years? Yes.
Everybody hates them, right? And so, yeah, exactly. So I think that this is like also important when we look at the different use cases, whether they are gaining trust from the people. And the, like example that you mentioned with the productivity increase or upsell increase, 30%, I think that this is like extremely good example on how this specific like ML model is improving the specific business process.
I mean, we had one example also where it's, this is going along elements where you say, in our industry, we typically have not a standard SKU. We very often have something like variant config. So we're having logic and we're applying logic. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was learning variant config, I don't know whether you still remember, Sergey, constraints are not the easiest thing to write. Nowadays, it's possible to basically, since a few years, click on a button and generate the code to basically write a simple constraint. Yes. Nowadays, with ChatGPT, we're talking about generating extension apps on the business technology platform, and you write 80% of the code, and the developer just has to adjust that. And this percentage is getting better and better. And
And this is like a huge productivity increase across the board because you are getting the regular user ability to like create basically an application or automate the business process without knowing any code, right? And this is extremely, I think, important, like if we look at the broader across the organization.
And an interesting older example that I like a lot that falls exactly in the same space is, do you remember BRF Plus? Some companies decided, you don't want to use classical configuration. I want to use BRF Plus instead. So they have graphical user formulas, they have tables where they define how the rules look like. But what happens in the background is they press a button and they generate ABAP OO code. So actually there's a whole lot of programming happening in the background, also since 10 years or more. And the code typically was better than what most of the developers wrote. So I think as a former developer, I like that.
Yeah, so good. So, but with this case, I think with the configuration, we're coming to the exactly to the code to cache processes and automation here, use cases, I mean. So, you know, my favorite topic, like request to order with everything we can do around this. But I think that if we look like in specifically into the code to cache processes, so I think that here we have like every step of the process could be improved with machine learning. And I think that you mentioned already upsells, but I think that if we look at the initial like opportunity scoring, lead scoring, like understanding what would be the best fit, customers to approach, what would be the upsell opportunities. And then you do all different kind of the modeling and like the forecasts, for example, that are being automated with machine learning, taking into account all the specific like external information and the pricing that like existing customers that we work with, they are running the ML models that are gathering the competitive pricing across the internet, for example, and this support helps them to make the relevant pricing on the offers. So, specifically on that part, do you see like, because like my experience is the following, we're coming with the request to order story and telling customers that they could automate, for example, purchase orders or customer requests. And the typical feedback I'm getting, oh, we never knew this exists, right? This is extremely powerful and we will increase the productivity of the salespeople. Do you see like kind of, you know, this coming the other way around, that customers are coming and asking for that, or it is still one way?
I would say it's, I don't know, maybe that's mean to say that. I think it depends on the customer. Some customers are basically front runners. We had that also in the council conversation. Let's say we try out everything. We have early adopter agreements and all kinds of things. Try things first, and they want to do that. And they have the capability to do that. And there are other companies that would love to use that, but they simply do not have the know-how to do that. And do not. I mean, we're working with not only with big corporations, but always sometimes with startups or mid-sized companies. And yeah. There it's much more tricky. I mean, some of the startups you've been working with have been, they don't even have an IT or anything.
They don't, no. Like we have an example, Liontown, they're extracting raw minerals from the ground for this transition from old energy to new energy. And they don't have any IT, they don't want any IT, and they can apply, rather than hiring resources, they have the ability to implement AI and machine learning that is already, the capabilities are already embedded within the core, you know, offering that SAP has, which makes it a lot easier for us to maintain and as well, and for them to maintain and to keep growing.
Which I think is one of the issues we had in the past. There was a lot of machine learning POCs.
Yes.
Actually getting them productive is a different question. And that for me is an important homework. Maybe we as SAP and also you as a solution partner actually need to do to basically make this work out of the box as much as possible. Because it's difficult. And in our industry, it's hard to get the right resources. We've been discussing that in mining, especially. It's very difficult to attract young people into the industry and with AI know-how.
Yeah,
even more difficult. I don't know how you do that, but this is a challenge.
Well, you know, we have a very good experience from subscription business because like everybody wants to be in the subscription space, but nobody knows how to do it. And, you know, we've been looking at big customers in packaging, like big in machinery, and their perception was that we should do it in the big bank, right? So we should like define subscription model, run everything from end to end in the single project. And then we said, no, I mean, you don't even understand how to build pricing for subscriptions. Let's do the POC and spend some like, I don't know, 20K maybe for that. And, you know, when we started doing this, it triggered a lot of questions on the customer side. And like they started thinking about things they never thought about before. And Yeah, and we're just simply applying the same logic here. We're coming and saying, like, you don't have to automate everything. Take one document, take one process, like run it.
Remember in the council, even how while you were running the roundtable where we had like packaging customers and steel customers, and they were talking about that they were getting like the input from a piece of paper for their sales order, or that it was just a simple process where they could just automate it. Like they could just easily, you know, grab all the information from just mundane, like very like dumb process, like very manual, very old. Like it shocked me like that there are still people. Yep.
Still people using a fax. We are in 2023. That was surprising. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, I think this creates a hell lot of work and does not create a hell lot of value for people doing that. This, I think, is something where we can make processes work faster, having responses faster. I mean, you're doing a lot around that, right, Sergey?
Yeah, we do a lot of around that, you know. And what I like is that basically you are, getting return on investment from the things that you never expected to get, right? Because, like, for example, let's look at the typical quote to cash process where you do a little bit of an automation, like, for example, on the product recommendation, and or like selecting products for the purchase order or something like that. That would mean that you don't need to train people for 2 years because you have complex products, complex variants. You just put the guy who's been like with company for 1 month. He's like getting all the responses from AI. He's validating and pushing the button and sending the quote, right? So, and this means that this time to market for the salesperson reduces dramatically. Then you get the overall improvement in the performance of the sales department. And then it automatically means that you are reducing the shortage in the hiring, right? And it's all coming together extremely nicely, and the feedback we're getting from the customers is like sometimes is unexpected, I would say.
Would you see like a reduction of turnover on the manufacturing like or shop floor because of AI or because of making this process any easier, or like because you would reduce your turnover with your front end like or with your front office employees, maybe making or allowing them to add value in other ways, but on the shop floor, would there be a way to help?
In my opinion, it actually would help because, I mean, honestly, some people still run pretty old user interfaces or hard to understand information. And you can use AI to actually make it human understandable easier. For in the quote to cash area, equally, we see that I can ask someone to pull the. I'm not a numbers person. You're much more than that. I can ask someone to actually pull together the figures before I have a customer call. What are the open figures? What are the deliveries? What is the problems? Are there potential escalations? And I can just get that on the press of a button directly from the system that basically gives me a customer summary that is up to date for this minute for this specific customer. Whenever I need that. And this is super powerful for me because I'm a little lazy, honestly, and I don't want to look that all up. I don't need to know where to look up all that stuff that is distributed across the system. Makes my life a lot easier.
And indirectly, it makes the people on the shop floor who are producing much easier. Sure. Yeah. And it reduces frustration on their behalf of maybe having to pull a coil and looking at it, or I don't know, like, or a reel and having to figure out, is this right or is this wrong? But having the technology that...
Yeah. And we see that also in the other way. For if you go more from on the marketing side, what we see is a lot of use cases where I discussed with a colleague, basically generating descriptions. I mean, for me, I'm presenting today to a copper company, tomorrow to an aluminum company, tomorrow to a steel company. It's the same solutions. I can create that deck 3 times, exchange the images, exchange the wording, or I can have AI do that. And this is for marketing, for commerce. I can make it really specific. And it sounds simple, but people actually like that. It makes a difference. If someone's talking about their industry context and in metals, they sell into whiteware, home goods, they sell into automotive, they sell into construction, sometimes even very similar products. But if you can frame it to your target group, it actually helps.
And yeah, exactly. Because, like, for example, sometimes, and it's again, you know, the readiness, like, and the level of experience, I would say, from the people. Sometimes you're coming to the customer and you face this type of the micro industry or the industry for the first time, and simply, you know, checking the typical challenges would help you to pitch better to the customer, and the customer will understand that you are tailoring the story to his specific use case, not just like coming and selling some broader picture generic, right?
I'm thinking about the conversation we had. Do you remember when we were in Chicago? There are companies that get an order and they need to figure out, well, can I actually manufacture that? The classical Varian config feasibility check kind of thing. Yes, there are a few people in the company who can decide that. But the more you can automate this kind of check, the faster you can respond back. The more you can basically say, okay, yes, we can manufacture it, which is more like a Varian config business rules question. And then there's the second bit that is closely connected. Yes, we can manufacture it, but how we can manufacture it. So we had in one of the last conferences, ITM Gestam presenting, they said basically we derive a recipe, we derive process parameters with machine learning that then help us to look, we haven't produced exactly that thing, but something similar. And what is the most similar thing? And how can I blend old recipes into something to manufacture that better and more efficient? Saves a lot of time and trials. So yesterday I was talking to chemical companies. For them, the whole innovation cycle, how quickly can I innovate with a new product? It takes a lot of effort and time. And yeah. And for us, developing new materials, it's the same thing, or even new parts.
Yeah, you know, I had a very good example with the company that is selling bacteria for yogurts and cheeses and stuff like that. And, you know, for them, the issue was pricing, actually. And the thing, like, their cycle looks like the following. They create, like, all these bacteria, they source, or for the cheese, for example, right?
Yeah.
They source it to the producer, and then the cheese ages for 3 years. And after that, we know whether the product is good or bad. And then the question is, how should we price this, right? Mm-hmm. And especially, like, with all this kind of the use cases, and there is also, you know, the way how you want to predict this. Or another example, if you are moving from the classic one-time sale to the subscriptions, my favorite topic. So how would you price the product, right?
Yes.
What your outcome-based and value-based pricing of your everything as a service? And like, how would you then do the projection if you are selling to the big manufacturer like Nestle, for example, that has like huge amount of products and production lines? And how would you like build the contract for 5 years for them in order to like stay profitable? And from the other side, in order to ensure the value and the outcome for the customer. Right. And so here we have also like all this complexity that the AI helps to solve.
How did they end up pricing it, the yogurt company?
Oh, they ended up with the pricing analytics tool that is basically taking your historical type of the data from different previous contracts. And then they are able to project basically how the contract could look like. And then they validate it and create the pricing around it.
That's an interesting thing. What we discussed the last 2 days, there were two factors. One was actually, where is my competition? How far are they gone? How close am I? And how much does my customer actually know about my product? Did they order exactly that or not? So there's a bit of information asymmetry. So if I buy something I do not know, I can price a little more. But they were equally saying they have the opposite problem. They're being overcharged from their suppliers and from their freight companies because they make a contract, but they do not exactly know whether this is the right price. So they're on both sides. They could use that on the selling side to be smarter and pricing better, but they also have that on the cost side where they actually say, well, we're actually in trouble because we are having someone on the other side who is smarter than we are. And machine learning to find, okay, someone is ripping us off.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, especially like these days with all the changes that are happening with the pricing, like, for example, last year when we've been together in Madrid on the conference, what happened, a lot of chemical companies been coming to us and saying, like, we've been like changing pricing like once in 2 years. Now we have to do it on the quarterly basis, maybe on the monthly basis. But ideally, we should have kind of, you know, real time pricing.
Yeah.
That would depend on all the different, you know, commodity prices and everything, and the changes, and basically having all the sources that is updating your pricing in the real time, or at least providing you the pricing.
Prices. You have energy prices. That in Europe, it was crazy. Energy prices was going up, going down.
Yeah,
so it was very difficult. Some companies basically had to sell.
Yeah, exactly. But what you are able to achieve again with AI, that you are in the real time monitoring all the data sources, and then you are analyzing them, and you are providing the pricing recommendations in the real time. And if you are like seeing that it is like trustful source of information that you could rely on, you just like create the real time pricing with the regular updates. And I think that like this is like, all right, we're switching to the pricing right now, but this is again an area that like extremely powerful for a lot of businesses.
It's a lot of money that is in there if you're doing that smartly. I remember being, I think it was OI presenting that at Sapphire. They were talking about they were having so many SKUs, they're having so many customer segments, and just understanding how to do that at scale. It's very difficult if you do that manually. And then how do you segment, and how do you deal all with that? How static is that? Is it still valuable? And then add the dynamic of the raw material price and the energy price to it. And normally I would say the classical sales department cannot do that anymore.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, also for the different pricing requirements, like for example, if you are pricing the RFP responses, in metals, for example, you have a lot of also different sources of information that you can use. I mentioned already competitive pricing, but then it is like simple distance from your plant to the customer, and how much it would cost you to ship your goods versus the competitor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you compare these two things, maybe you have like you could increase the price and get more profit from that, or you should decrease the price and to become more competitive. And we
share the, well, it's not, well, when I think of like this whole competitive landscape, and when you mentioned this morning about how they're getting like CMI insight just by crawling and creating like a one pager for them.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, you could be doing the same thing with sustainability reporting, with your annual financial reporting, and having somebody else and generating some sort of analysis for you to be able to.
It's a lot of data that is a lot of manual processing, where that comes in again, and where you can then say, I want to bring this information in an automated way together and crawl that information. Sometimes it's internal information, sometimes it's external, and this has an impact on price. Mm-hmm. Obviously, how much can I ask for a greener product is a discussion. Mm-hmm. Especially in metals, it's a big topic.
Exactly.
In packaging, it's the same thing.
And actually, Albemarle said yesterday that, well, it's slightly interesting, but they said that they're actually paying higher transportation costs for more sustainable suppliers and more sustainable routes.
Yeah.
So actually, companies are willing to pay
more.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what the use case that we're working on within Clarity right now on the CPQ level when you're configuring product. If you want to configure green product and provide the customer information with data sources, like would they be willing to pay more? You answered my question. Thank you.
Yeah. And it's not really the product, Sergey. It's actually, and I remember that from the miners. If you buy iron ore in Australia, you have the opportunity to send that with a dirty old ship, or you can take an LNG powered ship, which has a lot of less emissions, and you basically need to know what vessel you're basically booking.
Yeah, and having to be able to the capability of transitioning quickly, like back and forth between options. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to go greener, but say things are becoming off balance and you're, I don't know, not looking well financially, you could change your pricing metrics or your parameters quicker with AI based upon a recommendation, because you have, I would think you would have more insight of what is actually going on.
Yeah, and it's a question about how the market is evolving. I discussed yesterday with a company, chemical company. They are making membranes. They're making membranes for electrolyzers. And you can ask to generate hydrogen. In our industry, super important. And you can imagine this used to be a pretty boring business. It's sorry for the guys manufacturing that. But nowadays, this is totally going through the roof because the demand is increasing. You can ask a lot more for that. It's super profitable. And you should not be stupid and leave the money on the table. And this is something where you need to learn really around what is happening in the market. It's nothing that you necessarily know in the company.
Which keeps them in business for the long run. Like we've seen that with paper manufacturers, like when newspapers were at an all-time high, or maybe they're producing more cardboard, like corrugated boards, and then they have to quickly adjust to meet the market needs within their production processes.
Although this is difficult. I mean, we're having these discussions to see to use, and that's at the intersection of really request to order and actually supply chain planning. How do you make a demand plan? In some areas, you can use AI to do that. But if you're having the German COVID toilet paper crisis, no one expected that. It was just craziness of humans. And we were hit by that. You can then react faster. But this is difficult to predict. Some things changes when you see, okay, some things are happening.
But would it, as the model becomes stronger, more like in the future, could that be a vision of where?
Actually, I would doubt it. I mean, we were discussing that yesterday with some of our data scientists, and they said there is the how did they call it? It's a parking lot of broken dreams, where we're saying, okay, you people are having a lot of ideas around what you could do with generative AI or AI in general, but there are certain use cases. Well, no, actually, it's not a use case for it. It will not work. It's an outlier. It's something that is unexpected. It's a black swan event or whatever, how you call that. And it doesn't help you. It can help you derive trends from some data. But if something unexpected happens, like you're, yeah.
Okay.
So in some cases, yes. I mean, my car can predict dangerous situations happening and basically getting ready and getting the pedal already in brake mode before I even realize that. But if something unexpected happens and an asteroid hits me, shit.
Wouldn't it be kind of neat? Like if we could you feed 1,000 years of historical data into it,
I don't know.
You know.
Yeah. Actually you're smart. You're right, because we've discussed that with a partner company. They are using classical machine learning, but the trick what they are using is they're using generative AI to create training data for events where they are so rare, they don't happen often. So they basically let them create images and training data to make the machine learning model be prepared for something that did not happen yet, but they don't have data. So that's kind of cool. So you can do that, but then you need to somehow combine classical machine learning and some of the new capabilities. I'm curious what's going to happen. There's a lot to
come. I think that another huge lever here is that if you are taking the model that already working, for example, and you are leveraging this data in some different place. Like, for example, we've been working on this EGS reporting data model with ML, with our document processing system, where you gather all the different sources of information and then you build this report. And that means that the data is there. And that means that you can use this data not just for reporting, but also internally for the same coding process, right? So it's just like, I think that the matter of application of existing woodworking ideas across the organization.
And this was something that came up, yes, 2 days ago in an event that was focused around supply chain and the data. It was like data and AI. And if your data isn't, like, people were like, so if my, literally the whole room of maybe like 20 customers, and they were like, if my data isn't clean, that means I can't do AI. And everybody's like, no, like you can't start thinking about these things until you get your material masters in line, until you get everything.
Yes, but also AI can help with that. I mean, we were discussing that in the area of ESG reporting, for example. If you're collecting data, I've been in steel companies and in cement companies where people walking around with paper-based noting down things or with Excel, and then they have to bring that together. Some people mistype, and there's data coming in that is basically crap. And you look at that, and you can automate that and try to understand, is this an outlier because some accident happened and there were some unexpected emissions, or is it actually someone to actually write the right figure? And you can say, okay, I can point people to look at the errors, something is wrong. Then your data quality for the old reporting is much higher and you hear faster.
Yeah, exactly.
I did not know that you were actually doing that, Sergey.
Well, of course, we are having the machine learning engine that is capable of recognizing data from the documents and building something out of this data. So it's just, for us, it's another use case.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, but
that you got to tell me next time we meet.
Sure, sure. We can go through the use cases. But yeah, so it was extremely good conversation. So we ran out of time, but I think that we had a very good conversation. So let's take the final question here. What would be your recommendation, like, for AI implementation across the organization? So how would you, for those who are thinking where to start, what to do, what would be your like first recommendation, maybe three bullet points or something?
Take it slow.
Take it slow.
Yeah. I would say there are two ways. I mean, one is an area where I say use something that is or try it out with something that is a little less risk and that is pre-built. For me, if there's a chance that you can actually don't have to do all the science and all the Jugendforsch, we say in Germany, this is like a science project. You don't have to do all the nerdy things in the beginning and learn everything. Start off with a model that is already pre-built and then a use case that is existing and apply it and see whether it actually creates value and then create trust in the organization. The order to cash related examples that we had is a good example. A lot of that is basically pre-built. You have pre-built solutions for the document extraction. We have for the judging of whether a quote is good. This is something you can immediately use and try it out on the data you have. And this, I would say, this is a shortcut and making it easier to actually create value immediately. And it creates trust. And for me, that is a point where we say, I would go for things where it's easy to trust. And I wouldn't go probably into complex HR things or things where it's risky. I would go in something where it's actually helpful in creating immediate value. That's my view. I don't know, what would you say, Sergey?
Yeah, I would say the same. Like, leverage like the good working scenarios, split them in phases. Like, do something small, get the benefit, and then just think what you can do next.
I mean, maybe one additional thing. One thing that is upcoming, which I think is super easy, where there is a solution around basically talking to SAC, the SAP Analytics Cloud, so that you're having a conversational question. How are my financial figures doing for the sales organization X? And it gives you a response. You can use that on your existing SAC. And the entry barrier is so low. That's also something I would say. And it helps people actually say, okay, oh, it's easy. I don't have to remember reports. I can just ask. I would like that because
simple scenarios, like, you know, pricing recommendations is not the rocket science, right? You just have to have data sources and a little machine learning model on top of it, and you are there.
Exactly.
Okay.
Good idea. Hopefully, our listeners are doing that. I'm curious whether we get some feedback about people actually.
Yeah.
Are you using that?
Yes. Please provide us your feedback, whether you're using that, and what are your first steps like for AI implementation. We are definitely interested to hear. Okay, so I think that like we just like scratched the surface with a couple of questions, right? But I think that definitely we could set like the second episode of this podcast and discuss something else, because a lot of topics for the industry are still not discussed and super relevant for a lot of listeners. I think we can do it and plan it later. But thank you very much for this episode and being with us today. So thanks for coming.
Thank you for hosting us.
New format worked perfectly fine. Thanks a lot. So I think we're starting right now. Yes, that was good. Okay, so
thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
And thank you for listening. And we look forward to bringing more exciting topics in future episodes. And yes, as we mentioned already, please feel free to comment and like the podcast and subscribe. And see you in the next episodes. Thank you. Thank you, Master. Thank you.